we're going to call Life Track, which will just be our name for a bunch of classes that have to do with things about living life and living it successfully. We're going to have some on academics and some on health topics and different things. So we're going to, this particular Life Track course will just be Writing 101, and I'm going to ask Grace to come up here to help me with the demonstration. And the demonstration won't be on video, but you'll get to see it, and we'll try to. I'll try to describe it. Grace, how much rehearsal have we had?
None.
And what are we doing?
I have no clue.
She has no clue. Okay, that's the way it's supposed to be, right? Have a seat there, sweetie. Okay. Grace speaks a language other than English. I don't know how many of you know this. Actually, she does speak a smattering of Chinese, but she speaks another language that I'm going to ask her to demonstrate for you. And she's going to say three different things. Okay, so show them the first one. Now, I want you to watch. She's going to say three different things in fan language. And I want you to see what she's going to do. So do the slow one first. Even slower than that. Okay. Now show them the second one. A little faster. You got in fan language. Okay, now do the other one. Okay. And she's actually just said three different things. You may not know what it was. So let me ask her to go back through and I'll translate. So do the first one again. Now you notice she's putting the fan in her right hand. And she's fanning slowly. This would indicate that she is... she is married. If she fans with her right hand and slowly, it meant 100 years ago or so that she's married. If she was engaged, she would do it like this in the right hand, but now she's doing it faster, showing that she's an engaged young woman. And then if she moves it to her left hand, it means that she's available. Now, this is a problem because my wife is left-handed. And my wife gets one of these fans and she's out there advertising to the world she's available, and I assure you she's not. Okay? So, a fan in the right hand slow means I'm married. A little faster in the right hand means I'm engaged. And in the left hand it means I'm available. Now, let me ask you guys that are here, how many of you already knew that? Okay. Most of us men, though, seeing a woman sending us signals with a fan would be totally clueless and helpless because we don't speak fan language. Now, unfortunately, that's what happens when a lot of people try to write. Thank you, sweetheart. Appreciate that. That's what happens when a lot of people try to write, is they write something, and then when they get through writing it, the people who read it are totally clueless as to what was actually meant. Okay? So what we want to do is turn all of us into effective writers so that when you write something, the message actually gets across, because you can say one thing or write one thing and it be perceived as something totally different by someone else. And, what we have to do is eliminate the noise between the sender and the receiver so that the message that's sent is what actually gets received. So what I want to do is introduce you what I call the 7 C's of good writing. And these are things that I have taught to my kids. I think at the time I probably only taught them like 4 or 5 of these. Richard's counting 4 back there. So I'm going to teach you the 7 C's of good writing. And what we're going to do is we're going to cover the first one today, and I'll probably cram some of the others into a single lesson. So we have maybe 5 weeks of these lessons. And I am going to give you an assignment at the end. Now, there's a whole bunch of different kinds of writing we can do, obviously. Probably some of the most fun writing is creative writing. You kind of need a little artistic and creative side to you. Richard's far better at this than I am, because I tend to be an engineer, and everything I can explain things. I'm great at technical writing. That's probably my forte. Creative writing is something that takes more time than, quite frankly, I feel like I have to have. But creative writing can be to create something of beauty. It can be to create allegories and analogies. There's lots of wonderful things. Technical writing is what I make my living doing, working for a software company and writing explanations for people how to use that software. Business correspondence, just knowing how to write a proper business letter that gets you introduced to the right people, gets your point across, helps you sell a product, sell a service, or even sell yourself in terms of getting you the appointment or the contact information that you need. Another great form of writing every one of us, I think, should be involved in is blessing and exhortation writing. You need to know how to write a letter of exhortation to your children, to your parents, write a letter of blessing to them, write a letter of blessing to someone that you would like to help them motivate their lives for Jesus Christ. Maybe they need a shove in the right direction. Being an effective writer and being able to say something that's thought-provoking but say it in a gracious way is a very wonderful skill. And by the way, young people, let me just encourage you. A few years ago, I wrote my mother a letter, and I just thanked her for all the different things she had taught me through the years and the different things I had learned from her. And it ended up being about a 9-10 page letter. Probably don't need to go that off, you know, that much every time. But, you know, I was an old man, and I thought I better pay my respects while I can. And that was that is still one of my mother's treasured possessions. And when I called her a few days later, she says, "Whatever motivated you to write that?" That was such a blessing to her. Take that opportunity and give your flowers to people while they're still living, is what I call that. And then bless them. Bless them with the character qualities you want them to have and help them. And dads, I think every dad or every uncle, or every grandfather needs to write a letter like this to family members. Journaling is a great thing to do because someday, if the Lord tarries His return, someone may have an opportunity to read your journal and get to hear about your walk with Christ and your struggles and how Christ helped you through. Advertising. Everybody advertises, whether you know it or not. You either, you know, sometimes I wish I could rewrite the ads. And there's just some ads that are, some ads that really speak to the heart. You know, I don't watch television very often, but I was somewhere this last week and they showed this little boy who was, I guess, in the process of being potty trained. And he had gone in his little, you know, temporary potty, and he's so proud of it, he picks it up, and he runs to his mother to show her his accomplishment, and of course he's sloshing all the way. And he gets to his mother and says, "Look, I went in the potty," and she looks and notices it's empty, but she looks down the hallway and sees all the puddles, and then you see it goes to a picture of a Clorox bleach jug and says, "This is Clorox time." You know, and it really makes an impression on you. Somebody knew how to get to, you know, somebody has been a parent who wrote that ad because they've been there, they've done that. And then there is resume writing. I think even young people, while you're still in the process of school, need to be putting together a resume of maybe the ministry opportunities you've had, the jobs you've had, the things you've been able to do. You need to express it in creative ways and yet still tell the truth. But you need to begin putting a resume together because people really aren't going to care ultimately about where you were educated, but they are going to care very much about what you're capable of doing for them. Okay? Nobody pays you for where you went to school, but they will pay you for what you're capable of doing. So it's a good thing to start that process now. So why is it important for us to learn to write well? Well, first of all, you just need to learn to write well to honor Christ. It allows you to have an opportunity if you write well to leave a legacy of blessings, of the account of your spiritual walk, your insights, your journey for others, even if you're putting a blog on the internet. Maybe that's one of your ministries and it gets picked up regularly. If you are going to go on to post-secondary education, writing skills will set you apart in your grades because ultimately in every class, pretty much except for, you know, some math and science classes, you are going to write a paper and you need to know how to do it well. Another thing is to have a good job. Now, my brother was the first test pilot for the space shuttle. And when he went to work for NASA, my brother was a sharp student, and he has his major in nuclear engineering and his minor in space aerodynamics. But when he went to NASA, his boss said, "Fred, I would rather hire an engineer that made an A in English and a C in engineering than someone who made an A in engineering and a C in English." And the reason why is because engineers very often lack good communication skills. And one of the biggest things you have to do when you have a big project like the space shuttle is you had a lot of different moving pieces. You needed engineers that could actually communicate well in written form between the various groups. They could find somebody to crunch out the numbers and do the blueprints, but finding somebody that could communicate what was going on is a difficult thing because most engineers don't really speak English. I'm one of those people, so I know the challenge that's there. And the other thing is, good writing skills, I believe, will set you apart from the rest of the market. We're in an increasingly competitive job market in this country. And a lot of, especially in the IT or information technology industry, a lot of the jobs that used to be computer jobs here are farmed out to other nations now. We don't keep a lot of programmers here in the U.S. We keep some, but most programming gets farmed off to places like India or the Ukraine or some other place, and that's fine, and they do that because they can get cheaper labor to do the same thing there. One of the things they can't get in most other countries, though, is somebody who can write well in good English for the English audience. So that's an important thing. And by the way, Faith, if you would, there's some of these handouts. There, I think they're like 4 pages apiece if you want to grab them off the printer and staple them. So I do have some notes that we'll pass out to help you remember these things. And then the other thing is it's just a job skill that translates across a lot of different industries. If you write well, you don't have to be in the same industry the rest of your life because everybody needs somebody that can communicate well. And that's a good thing to know. So let me go over the 7 C's of good writing. These are the most important things you probably ever hear me say. First of all, good writing should be clear. In other words, it needs to be clearly understood. It needs to be able to be translated into other languages without losing the meaning. It needs to be concise, which means don't use more words than you have to tell something. Why use 30 words if 3 will do? Okay? Be concise. You need to be colorful. And I'm going to talk, and some of you are familiar with Andrew Poudois' writing stuff. I have one major difference of opinion with Mr. Poudois, and I'll discuss that when we talk about being colorful. It needs to be compelling, or the word I think I've used with some of my kids in the past is concrete. In other words, give real facts, not just opinions when you're writing, and motivate people to a conclusion of some kind. It needs to be correct, which means grammatically correct. It reflects poorly, particularly on homeschool students when they write an essay or something and they end sentences with prepositions, even though we talk that way a lot, or they split infinitives or other things that they do, that an educated person can look at it and say, well, these people never learned their English, okay? So you want to write correctly. Anything worth doing is worth doing right. It needs to be cohesive. In other words, not disjointed, not looking like you chase one rabbit in this paragraph and you chase another rabbit in this paragraph, but what does the first paragraph have to do with the second paragraph? Do you have a well-outlined paper? Do you have transitions between the paragraphs? And don't worry so much about what each one of these means because we're going to come back to it. And then ultimately, I think all writing needs to be Christ-centered. Now, obviously, when I'm doing technical writing for IBM, that doesn't mean that I can find some way to put Jesus in every page of a software manual. But it does mean that I represent Jesus Christ in my job, and the Bible instructs me that I am to serve my employer as though I were serving the Lord. And whatever you do, whether it's in word or deed, do it heartily as unto the Lord, not as unto men. And we need to do our very best to represent Christ. So all writing should have as its goal, whether it's writing you're doing for your employer, a blog you put on the internet, a journal that could be left behind for a younger sibling to read someday, it all should have as its goal to glorify Jesus Christ. Now, we want to look at the first C today, and I want to talk about the fact that writing needs to be clearly understood. Now, my favorite writer, everybody has a favorite writer, if you read, that is, you have a favorite writer. And by the way, if you don't read, you'll never be a good writer, because that's the best way to learn to write is read good writers. My favorite writer is a doctor, and he's an amazing doctor. He wrote a very familiar book, because it's the fourth book in your New Testament, it's Dr. Luke. And I want you to notice Luke's reasons for writing. He says, "For as much as many have taken in hand to set forth in order a declaration of those things which are most surely believed among us, even as they delivered them unto us, which from the beginning were eyewitnesses and ministers of the word, it seemed good to me also, having had perfect understanding of all things from the very first, to write unto thee in order, most excellent Theophilus, that thou mightest know the certainty of those things wherein thou hast been instructed." Now, I want you just to notice a few things. One thing, Luke is saying, other people have already written about Jesus. But he said that's not good enough. For one reason, not everybody else had written stuff in order. Have you ever, and some of you adults can identify with this, I go back and recount parts of my life history, and I'll get started down a story and then realize I left out an important detail that came before that, and I'll say, well, wait a minute, let me tell you, before that happened, this happened. keeping stuff in chronological order, especially as you get older, becomes more of a challenge. Okay, and Luke, I think, met with this challenge, and he wanted to make sure things were kept in order. So other people had written the gospel, but it wasn't a full enough account. Luke's gospel is longer than any of the other gospels. He has the most full account. It's the longest gospel of the four. He wanted to put things in order to make sure that there was proper chronology. So if you really want to know what happened in what order, you're probably better going to Luke than you are Matthew, Mark, or John. And then he wanted to reinforce the teaching. He says, I've had a perfect understanding of all these things from the very first. I want you to know the certainty of those things you've been taught. He says, I want to give you the certainty. So he wanted to reinforce the teaching of others. And he wanted to help Theophilus know what certain truths were. So let's talk about what it means for writing to be clear. One thing it means is use direct language. Very simply put, that means say what you mean and mean what you say. Okay? Just say what you mean. What's that? Only one? Okay, it was supposed to print 10. We'll print some more out. And I'll make the notes available on the internet and send out an email so you can print these notes at home if you like. Don't try to sound ostentatious. A lot of people write and they try to be flowery. There is a great tool called Roget's Thesaurus. Most of you are familiar with the thesaurus, or where you look up a term. And Mr. Roget was kind enough to give us a list of other terms that mean the same thing or things, other terms that meant the opposite. It's a great place to find synonyms and antonyms. Of course, now we've got that built into Microsoft Word, so probably none of you have actually used a Roget's Thesaurus because the computer does it for you. But it's a great tool to get other words, but sometimes people look up stuff on the thesaurus just for the purpose of let's have a fancier word. Now, I think the value of a thesaurus is see if there's a better word, or if you're trying to alliterate something, see if there's a good alliteration word, or if you've been using the same word over and over again and you're about to bore your reader to death, then find another word. But don't do it to sound ostentatious or flowery or overly scholarly, more so than you would ordinarily be. And the other thing is, probably in school, the number one mistake I see students making when they write essays, write papers, is they don't really have any content, and so they write a lot of sentences and they pad it with fluff, which means they have a lot of flowery-sounding words, but they don't really mean anything. They don't really say anything. I'll show you some examples of that here in a little bit. Just use very direct language. Say what you mean what you say, and make sure that you have something worth saying. Here's another thing. Keep it simple. So look at this example here that I put up here. Here's an actual writing example. Here's what it said before. High-quality learning environments are a necessary precondition for facilitation and enhancement of the ongoing learning process. The simpler way to say that is children need good schools if they're to learn properly. Why not say what you mean? Concise. In other words, keep it. Part of being clear is keeping it simple. It's a sad fact. That most of the United States reads on a 6th and 7th grade reading level. So if you read on a better reading level than that, and you write on that level, you may not be well understood. By the way, it's interesting that it takes about an 11th grade reading level to read a King James Bible well. So if everybody read King James, they could automatically bump their grade level up by about 5 years. Just that one little thing. Here's another example. If there are any points on which you require explanation or further particulars, we should be glad to furnish such additional details as may be required by telephone. Why not just say, if you have any questions, please phone? Okay? That's a whole lot clearer, isn't it? Less words, it's just more clear. All right. Another thing you have to watch for is a thing called ambiguity. The word ambiguous means the word can have more than one meaning, and the reader isn't sure which one you intended. And this leads to something called Humpty Dumpty syndrome, which means that individuals fail to realize that words have many meanings, and others don't know the intent of their particular statement. And by the way, here's a startling fact. The 500 most commonly used words in the English language have an average of 23 meanings each. For example, if you look up the word round, R-O-U-N-D, there are 70 distinct dictionary meanings for the word round. You know, it could be you sing part of the first verse and then I sing part of the first verse after you. That's a round. Okay? A round could be something that you cut out, a circle you cut out of wood. It could be a bunch of things. There's 70 different meanings for the word round. So let me give you one tip. This tip is a really good one. When you've written something, before you let anybody else read it out loud to yourself. Now, it was about the third book I published. I took that book and I sat in my office and I read the chapters out loud to myself. And it was scary because I found whole things in there that didn't even have a verb in the sentence. You know, it ended up being a sentence fragment because somewhere in the editing or cutting and pasting, I'd killed a verb and there wasn't even a verb in it. It's kind of like reading, oh, well, that doesn't make sense. You know, and so read it to yourself. And then if find someone else that doesn't really, hasn't been involved in the project from the get-go, have them read it and say, would you please mark anything that doesn't seem clear to you? Is there anything that you don't understand that I wrote here? Because other people with different backgrounds, different vocabulary, different families, different cultures will see stuff that you don't know. Have somebody else read it through. That's a great way. And my wife's really good about that. She can read stuff through, and sometimes my kids will help, and I'll have them read stuff. I even had my mother read a thing or two before. It's a great way to help find other things. So it's important to make sure that you're avoiding ambiguity. So let me give you some examples. And some of these are a little ridiculous, but you have to be careful when you're sending the right message. Let me show you some actual newspaper ads. This first one, they were trying to save a little money because it cost by the character. It says, two female Boston Terrier puppies, 7 weeks old, perfect markings, 555-1234, leave mess. They meant leave message, but what's it look like when you read it in the newspaper? Leave mess. And you know what kind of mess puppies leave, right? Okay, not a good thing. How about this one? Dinner special, turkey $2.35, chicken or beef $2.25, children $2. Wow. And I'll just tell you right now, some of them children are sweeter than others. Okay, how about this one? Used cars, why go elsewhere to be cheated? Come here first. Now, how does that come across to you? Okay, let's look at some more examples. Now this, you all have seen Gerber baby food, right? Well, they put a picture of a cute little baby on the jar. What they didn't know when they started shipping their products to Africa, in stores in Africa, a lot of people there cannot read, and so they put a picture on the jar of what's in the jar. Gerber baby food did not go over well in Africa with a picture of a baby on the jar, okay? So you have to understand the culture that things are going into because of the way the message will be perceived. How about this one? Here's some sentences from newspapers. We do not tear your clothing with machinery. We do it carefully by hand. Okay. Here's one. It says, after Governor Baldrige watched the lion perform, he was taken to Main Street and fed 25 pounds of red meat in front of the Fox Theater. That'll help any politician to be fed 25 pounds of meat in front of the Fox Theater. You know, who was fed, the governor or the lion? Okay, so but it's ambiguous. You can't tell. Here's one that says, Dr. Benjamin Porter visited the school yesterday, lectured on destructive pests. A large number were present. Okay, actual sentence from a newspaper. So obviously meaning's not intended. Here's another one. This is pronouns. Now, by the way, pronouns, let me tell you a little trick about pronouns. You might want to write this down. When you're using a pronoun, make sure that the reader always knows to what the pronoun refers. In other words, what should happen, pronouns should always refer to the noun immediately before it. Okay? So, but let's read this, and I want you to see how if you don't know what the pronoun's referring to, it totally changes the meaning of these two sentences. This one says, the Duchess handled the launching beautifully, confidently smashing the champagne against the prow. The crowd cheered as she majestically slid down the greasy runway into the sea. Well, if you know this, they call ships, they refer to ships by the feminine, and so they were saying the ship slid down the greasy ramp in the sea, but it sounds like the Duchess didn't look so good when this was over with. How about this one? Anti-nuclear protesters released live cockroaches inside the White House Friday, and these were arrested when they left and blocked a security gate. I want you to know, if I see a cockroach blocking a gate, I'm going somewhere else. Okay? And just exactly where do you put the handcuffs on the cockroach? You know, think about that one for a minute. Okay? So this is what you call pronoun confusion. People used a pronoun, and you don't know what it really refers to, and it messes up the whole sentence. Titles are just as bad. Now, titles, like if you're writing a term paper, you need to put little paragraph titles. Or if you're writing a blog or something, you're going to put titles on your articles. Be careful with titles, because what you're trying to do is condense meaning into a short number of words, and often that leads to confusion. So here's some actual titles. This one, something went wrong in jet crash, expert says. How many of you could have figured out that if there was a jet crash, something had already gone wrong, right? Didn't need that one. How about this one? March planned for next August. You know, March is such a busy month. Let's put it off to August. How about L.A. voters approve urban renewal by landslide? I've been to Los Angeles. A good landslide would actually renew much of that city. Okay? So what exactly does that mean, the way it's phrased? How about this? 250,000 Chinese live on water. Well, that's a lot cheaper than living on rice and soy sauce and other stuff. Let's just all drink water. If it works for 250,000 Chinese, it should work for us. I think they were talking about the folks on the boats outside of Hong Kong. How about Hershey bars protest? Now, wait a minute. Is it Hershey bars the protest, or is it Hershey bars protest? Can you imagine a bunch of Hershey bars with little signs walking down the street? They're on strike because there's not enough almonds to go around. Or I don't know, you know. So, you know, what do those things mean? How about this one? Police begin campaign to run down jaywalkers. Well, I have to talk to Mr. Pell about that one. Safety experts say school bus passengers should be belted. Come here, you school bus passenger. Oh, okay. So, you know, that doesn't make sense. How about drunk gets 9 months in violin case? I've heard of solitary confinement before, but that's going to cramp. Okay? That's going to cramp. How about a survivor of Siamese twins joins parents? Well, listen, if you just got unhooked from somebody, why do you want to be sewed on to your parents? You know? That didn't come across quite right. How about Farmer Bill dies in house? Or was it Farmer Bill dies in house? You know, it's hard to tell there, right? Iraqi head seeks arms. Does that mean that there's a head out there just wishing he had a pair of arms so he could pick his own nose? Or does this mean that the, you know, head of the Iraqi government's looking for, you know, firearms or something? How about some other titles? Does this next one actually is this could be a winter headline in a place where it snowed a lot? It could say stud tires are out. But stud tires out, is that stud tires out or stud tires out? Means a big difference there, right? How about this one? Lung cancer in woman mushrooms. Does it mean that lung cancer in women is mushrooming, or does it mean that there's some woman mushrooms? Anyway. How about this one? Teacher strikes idle kids. Or is it teacher strikes idle kids? In other words, are they going on strike and that's causing the kids to be idle because the teachers aren't in the classroom? Or are the teachers around slapping all the idle children? Okay. Here's one. Reagan wins on budget, but more lies ahead. Or is it, but more lies ahead? Is it, which is lies ahead or lie, you know, anyway. How about this one? Squad helps dog bite victim. Now, is it the squad helps a dog bite victim or the squad is helping the dog bite the victim? There are some people that are unpopular. Okay, could be that. What about shot off woman's leg helps Nicholas to 66? I'm talking about Jack Nicklaus. He was 66 years old, or he had a score of 66 on the golf course, and apparently it was a shot that came off a woman's leg, but it actually helped him win the tournament. But it also makes it sound like after this woman had her leg shot off, the leg showed up and helped Nicklaus to his golf score. Yeah. This next one, I wish Eric Schultz were here to help appreciate this one. Plane too close to ground, crash probe told. Yeah, isn't that the problem with most plane crashes? They're too close to the ground. Yeah. How about this one? Miners refuse to work after death. Does that mean there was a death and nobody wants to go back to work in the mine? Or does it mean that they said, you know what? When we die, we're not showing up the next day. No. How about this? Juvenile court to try shooting defendant. Are they trying someone who shot, or are they going to try shooting the defendant because they're less likely to return to the court system that way? Okay. Here's another one. Stolen painting found by tree. Well, at least the tree was looking for the stolen painting. How about two Soviet ships collide, one dies? Yeah, well, at least one of the ships lived. Two sisters reunited after 18 years in checkout counter. I have been in that checkout counter line. And it was long, let me tell you. And I can see, you know, they might start saying, wait a minute, do I remember you from my childhood? You know, after you've been there 18 years, you start to recognize people. What about your instructions? Because one of the purposes of writing is to give instructions. Now, look at some. These are instructions. This is from a bag of Fritos. You could be a winner. No purchase necessary. Details inside. So you go to the store. You want to know how to win the contest. You don't have to buy the Fritos. All you got to do is open them up in the store and leave it there. It's a shoplifting nightmare, right? How about this one? This is on a bar of Dial soap. Actual instructions. Use like regular soap. Well, what does the instructions on the regular soap say? That's what I want to know. Probably says use like Dial soap. You know? How about on some Swan frozen dinners? It says serving suggestion, defrost. You know, I probably would add, you might even want to cook it after that. On Tesco's tiramisu dessert, and this is printed on the bottom of the box, it says, do not turn upside down. Here's a Rowenta iron, and our family goes through steam irons all the time, and it says the same thing on their steam iron thing. It says, do not iron clothes on the body. Well, wouldn't that save a lot more time? Just go ahead and put on your clothes and then iron, you know? You'd at least move iron faster, wouldn't you? And this is on a Korean kitchen knife. It says, warning, keep out of children. Sometimes when you translate stuff from Korean to English, it doesn't all come across just right. And by the way, any of you parents with young children, please do keep your knives out of your children. We don't want to be responsible for that. All right. Now, the other thing is, one of my challenges is I just got through writing an 1,179-page book for IBM, and one of the first things they do once it's published, they have to translate it into some other languages. And I have to be careful how we put stuff, because phrases that make sense to me in English don't translate well. By the way, I've got a great video I should have brought. I have a great video of my father-in-law trying to translate for me in Taiwan one time. And I started telling a joke. And if you ever want to see your pastor come unglued, you ought to see him trying to translate a joke into Chinese that I'm telling. But it's because things don't translate. Well, look at this first one. These are a list of things that might mean something to us, but think about you as a translator trying to translate these phrases into, say, Spanish or Chinese or something. Act naturally. Well, which is it? Well, that's a hard phrase. Are you acting or are you being natural? What about resident alien? Yeah, it means something to us, but, you know, hard to translate. Genuine imitation. Good grief. A lot of people don't get that one. Almost exactly. Or sanitary landfill. How many of you have been to a landfill lately? Not sanitary places, no. Legally drunk. What we mean is that they are illegally drunk because they are over-intoxicated. Jumbo shrimp. Okay, that's people don't understand it. A small crowd. Soft rock. Sweet sorrow. Now then. You know, these things don't translate well into other languages. Taped live. a peace force. You're going to use force for peace. That's interesting. Plastic glasses. That's hard to translate. You know, we know what they mean. Tight slacks or something is pretty ugly. That's hard to translate. Which is it, you know? And you imagine you're a translator and somebody says, oh, that was pretty ugly. And they're like, huh? What about a working vacation? Or it was found missing. Or advanced basic. Basic meaning beginner's all-purpose symbolic instruction code, a computer language. The same difference. Alone together. Silent scream, the living dead, synthetic natural gas, which you get at Taco Bell, by the way. Passive aggression, clearly understood, an exact estimate. Well, how are those things going to translate? Now, by the way, this hits not only people writing manuals, but it has hit professional news writers. When John F. Kennedy Jr. had an accident and died. The Reuters initial report on the wire said this, Kennedy's board cutter on way to sea burial. Well, they realized that when that got translated into other language, they'd see board cutter and they might think that somebody was putting Mr. Kennedy on a kitchen chopping board. And so they changed the headline. They sent it out again a few minutes later. The fact is, it was, 45 minutes later. So it says, Kennedy's board shipped to scatter JFK Jr.'s ashes. Well, that was a lot more clear. And that's a real story. Here's another trick to being clear. And that is, avoid really long sentences. As a rule, you should never have a sentence in a paper you write that's longer than 15 to 23 words, 23 on the outside. Because if it's longer than that, what happens is it's hard for the reader to keep their attention long enough for them to process the whole sentence. It's better to put things in several short sentences. Now, the good rule of thumb here is use short sentences when you're making terse points. Use long sentences when you need to be maybe a little artistic or more flowing. But try to keep it no longer than 18 to 23. So a good writer varies the length of the sentences. You should have a whole bunch of short sentences, maybe one long sentence in the paragraph to break it up. But you don't want more than maybe one long sentence per paragraph. Avoid run-on sentences. And if you have separate thoughts, put them in separate sentences. So here's a paragraph. Watch this paragraph. You may actually have trouble seeing the change between this and the after, but here's the before. A detailed and thorough critical analysis must be made of this text in order to understand the experiences and resulting viewpoint of this much established but deeply traumatized writer whose life itself is a very interesting text. Now, when I get through reading it, I go, oh. Now, if you're running out of breath when you read it out loud, it's too long. Okay? But really, there's more than one thought in this sentence. So why not split that sentence up into shorter thoughts? And instead, you could say, with just a little bit of editing, a detailed and thorough critical analysis must be made of this text in order to understand the experiences and resulting viewpoint of this much established but deeply traumatized writer, period. Then you can say, his life itself is indeed a varied and interesting text. It's a separate thought, put it in a separate sentence. That breaks it up a little bit. So break it up. Now, by the way, there's a book called Software Requirements, and these charts are from that book, but it's got some terms to avoid. So here's some things to avoid using. They're kind of ambiguous. For example, to use the word acceptable or adequate. Well, who gets to decide what acceptable and adequate is? So if you write that, you need to clarify for your writer what makes it acceptable, what makes it adequate. Or how about as much as practicable? Well, you can't leave it up to the reader to determine whether or not it's practicable. So you need to clarify what is actually the right amount. How about at least or at a minimum or not more than or not to exceed? Well, if you're writing technical writing, you need to actually specify the value and not give them some vague amount. Or how about depends on? Rather than saying this depends on that, explain why it depends on. What's the nature of the dependency. The word efficient, if you're using the word efficient, why is it efficient? Tell the reader how it uses something well. And so there's several others. Now I'll put these up on the website so you can find them. But, you know, the word optionally, ideally, normally, several of these. Let me give you a good rule of thumb. If a word ends in L-Y, don't use it if you can get away with it. Okay? This is one of the things Mr. Pudwa and I differ on. Adverbs weaken your writing. Any word that ends with an L-Y is likely an adverb. It will weaken your writing to use an adverb. Let me give you an illustration, and we're going to cover this later. But let me give you an illustration of maybe three ways of saying the same thing. He walked out of the... Well, we'll pretend this is an old Western book, okay? He walked out of the saloon with a sad look on his face. Sentence number one. Sentence number two. He walked out of the saloon dejectedly. Third sentence. He walked out of the saloon looking lower than a snake's belly in a wagon rut. Now, which one of those gave you the most colorful picture? Okay, it was the third one. And because you start thinking, man, that's pretty low. Snake's belly in a wagon rut, that's pretty low. But, and there was no adverb there. Dejectedly is an adverb. But lower than a snake's belly in a wagon rut is an adjectival phrase. You should always use adjective phrases instead of adverbs when you can because it's more colorful. And we're going to talk more about that when we get to the colorful C But as a rule, if you've got words that end in L-Y, just try to avoid using them because generally speaking, they're going to weaken your writing. Here's some other things. Several is kind of a bad one because several, you know, you don't know if that means three people or 300. So you don't know if he says several people believe this. Is that three people believe it or 3,000 people believe it or 3% of the world's population believe this? Don't know. It's ambiguous. State of the art. Use that all the time in technical writing, and you think, well, what exactly does that mean, that it's state of the art? It doesn't mean anything. It's user-friendly. You know, that could be up to the user. And fact is, one of the things that you'll notice is that bad writers use ambiguity to cover up the fact they don't really know what they're talking about. So let me give you some examples of this. And here's examples of people using what I call fluff or bad writing to make up for the fact they haven't really researched what they're talking about. And a good professor who's grading a paper in college will see right through these. They know to look for this kind of stuff. So, for example, these are actual phrases from academic papers. It has been long known. What that really means is, I didn't look up the original reference, but yes, I've heard it. Maybe it's not true. Or here's another phrase. A definite trend is evident. What that means is these data and observations are practically meaningless, but please pay attention to them if you're investing in this. Here's another one that says, while it has not been possible to provide definite answers to the questions, what the writer is really saying is, I've made an unsuccessful attempt to figure this out, but I'm hoping to go ahead and publish a book and make some money off of it anyway. Okay? Or three of the men were chosen as models. It's because all the other men didn't make any sense. Or a typical picture is shown. What that meant is it was the prettiest picture he could find. This one, my articles will be in a subsequent report. That means I might get around to this sometime if I get enough likes on Facebook or somebody pushes me enough to write it. Or this one is one of my favorites. In my experience, which really means once. Or in case after case, which really means twice. Or in a series of cases, which means at least three times it happened this way. Or it is believed that really means I think so-and-so. But, you know, when you say it is believed that, it makes it sound like it's bigger and fluffier and more people believe it than that. It is generally believed that. It means probably at least two other people think the same thing you thought. But it makes you, and you know what they're doing when they're doing this? They're fluffing it up to try to make a strong point out of the weak one. If you got facts, you can make the case and let the reader come up with their own conclusion. You don't go out here and say, well, it is generally believed that. In fact, I could very easily say it is generally believed that a piece of primordial slime developed its own DNA and became an amphibian and crawled up on land where it became a reptile, and then it crawled up and developed a prehensile tree and swung from the branches for a while and ultimately became a college biology professor. Doesn't make it true, but that is what people generally believe. Okay, so you know, a lot of people will tout this. It is generally believed. By the way, you read evolution literature, you'll see a whole lot of that kind of phrasing right there because they don't have any proof. Here's one. This is correct within an order of magnitude. What that really means is it's wrong most of the time. It's correct every now and then, but wrong most of the time. According to statistical analysis. But they don't give you the statistics. They don't show you the studies. What that really means is that rumor has it that such and such. Or a statistically oriented projection of the significance of these findings. It means I'm making a wild guess here. Okay? Or a careful reading of other articles. What that means is I had some notes, but I dumped over my tea on my notes, and now I don't know what they were. But I do remember seeing some other articles that said something or other. It is clear that much additional work will be required before a complete understanding of this phenomenon occurs. What that really means is I don't understand it. Okay? And then one more. It says, after additional study by my colleagues, it means your colleagues don't understand it either. Or thanks are due to Verindir for assistance with the writing and to Harbajan for valuable discussion. It means Mr. Vera did the work. Mr. Harbajan explained to him what it meant. And yeah, here's the last one. A highly significant area for exploratory study. It means it's a totally useless topic I picked by myself, but I wanted you to be impressed with it. All right, so writing needs to be clear. You need to have direct language. Mean what you say. Say what you mean. Keep it simple. Try to use short sentences where short sentences will do. Don't go for flowery or ostentatious language. Avoid ambiguous terms, terms that can mean more than one thing. And one of the best ways to do that, have somebody else read what... Well, first of all, you read out loud to yourself what you wrote. Because when you read it out loud, you will hear stuff you didn't know was in there. And you think, oh, what did I say there? Then you have somebody else read it out loud and have them take a yellow highlighter and mark everything that doesn't make sense to them. And when you talk to them, say, well, what about this didn't make sense? And they'll say, well, I just didn't understand what you mean. If they don't understand what you mean, then you haven't done your job as a writer. You need to go back and fix it so that it's absolutely clear. Maybe you need a picture. Maybe you need an illustration. Maybe you need a technical description of something. You need to get it right. But keep it simple. All right, so here I've got a homework assignment for you. So this is what I want you to work on this week. And, you know, your parents can check this out, give it to a friend. But what I want you to do is write a two-page typewritten autobiography. An autobiography, if you don't know, is just a paper about your own life. How did you wind up being you, where you are now in life? What's the story of your life? Now, obviously, for some of us, that's a longer story than others, but write the autobiography. I had to do this one time in a social sciences class. I had to write a spiritual autobiography, and that was interesting. And if you want to do it from that perspective, that's fine. It needs to be done on a computer or typewriter with a font. No, y'all know what a typewriter is? Everybody know what a typewriter is? Wow, I'm relieved. Okay, but a font size 10 to 12 points. In other words, don't make really big things. So well, I filled up two pages and there's only three sentences there. Then have somebody other than a family member read through it. Because a family member, if you're writing an autobiography, they know all the same facts about your life that you know, or at least most of them. And if you get a family member to read it and something's not clear, they'll kind of know what you meant, and so they won't mark it. But if you give it to somebody who doesn't know you well, or that doesn't know your whole life history, then if something doesn't make sense to them, they can mark that up and say, I don't understand that. What does that mean? What did you mean by this? Okay? So try to find somebody other than a family member to do this. And mark it up, then save that copy, and then rewrite it to clarify all the things the person didn't understand. And you might even want to go through that little process twice. And then you'll have just a two-page autobiography that should be clearly understood. If somebody wanted to say, well, who are you? Tell me a little about yourself. Oh, I happen to have this handy two-page autobiography ready. That'll make you a real topic of conversation at your next social party, let me tell you. You know, you'd be the only person there with a written autobiography. That'll separate the wheat from the chaff, won't it? Okay. Any questions about just being clear? And what I'll do is I'll post a PDF of this stuff online so you can see all those ambiguous terms that were on those three charts just to avoid using. But in general, avoid using LY words. It's just a good idea to do that. I know they tell you in school, use adverbs, but I think they weaken your writing. And I will show more of that. Okay, any other questions? Questions about writing clearly. So the only exercise here is to write something short and simple, but make sure that it is completely understandable. Okay? Now, later we're going to write some other things, and I'm going to have you take it. I'm going to have you write a technical description of something and then a colorful description of something so you can see the difference between the two, and I'm going to show you a sample of that from my own writing. Also going to have you... I'm going to show you the number one thing that causes me to bleed all over my children's papers. And Melody and Richard can both tell you what that is. They can tell you that I can really bleed red all over paper. But this one little trick, if you learn this one little trick, it'll make you a better writer than 90% of the people around you that are writing the same assignment. Just this one little trick, simple trick. It makes you amazingly better. All right, any questions? All right, so there's your homework, and I'm glad to assist you in reading those or proofreading them, but just try to get somebody, it's not a member of your family, to go over that, and if you want me to professionally review it, then that's fine. You can email it to me. That'll be great. My prayer, I got two goals in doing this. One is I think a church needs to minister to the whole man, so we need to help people academically, we need to help them financially, we need to teach them good principles of health. That should all be part of the ministry of a church. And we are going to be having some health seminars here as well. The other thing is, I think that it would be wonderful if our church turned out 20, 30, 40 excellent writers that could be influencing the world for Christ with excellence. and that we should always strive for excellence in anything we do. Let's go to the Lord in word of prayer and you'll be dismissed. Father, thank you for the opportunity to learn to do things well. And I pray for each person here that they'll learn to be an excellent writer, that they'll use those talents to write books and magazine articles and newspaper articles and blogs and things that will teach your truths and who will inspire and motivate others, that they'll use their skills to bless others and to encourage others, that they'll use your skills to be points of light in an ever-darkening world around us. Well, Lord, we love you, and we just ask that you'd help us to show excellence in everything we do for Jesus' honor and glory. For it's in his name we pray. Amen. All right, thank you. You're dismissed.